Welcome to BitCast on Podcast One, the video game podcast with the Axeman.
Welcome back to the BitCast. In 2017, Super Mario Odyssey was released for the Nintendo Switch, and it was very well received. While Mario has always enjoyed the stream of success that comes with being Mario, Odyssey is considered by many to be his first major outing since Super Mario Galaxy 2, 7 years prior. In the time between those games, he'd mostly seen spin-offs, as well as the new Super Mario Bros. Games and the Super Mario 3D games. Those could be considered to be major Mario games in their own right, depending on who you ask, but a lot of people kind of see them as a tier below the games like 64, Sunshine, and the Galaxies. And to be entirely honest, Super Mario Galaxy 2 was mostly composed of ideas that were left over from the original Galaxy game, a 2007 entry. So, depending on some people, Mario Odyssey is the first real original Mario game in 10 whole years. In celebration of Galaxy's 10th anniversary, and to get my Mario fix before getting a chance to play Odyssey, I decided to pop the disc in and see what I thought of the game. It's been quite a while since I last played it. I think it was still new when I went through it for the first time. Well, yeah, obviously, but the first time would also be the last time, if you catch my drift. I haven't really had a good track record of going back to games after I beat them, with a few exceptions. I've been trying to get better about that in recent years, and now I finally got the chance to put Mario Galaxy on that list. Outside of certain RPGs, I've always felt that the first Galaxy was my favorite Mario game, and while there's no doubting its excellence, I still feel like I need to go over a retrospective and kind of explain why I think the game was important to the Mario series as a whole. The first thing that's impressed people with Mario Galaxy was the gravity mechanic. Since you're playing around in space, you get to experience planets with their own fields of gravity. After the intro sequence, Mario gets to be on a completely round planet, which is good for establishing the gravity concept. But once you get to the first proper level, the Good Egg Galaxy, you get a feel for just how crazy these games can be with their gravity. You start on a disc-shaped planet with decorations on the top and bottom, and you have to go to the underside of the planetoid to make progress. For years, a lot of people have wondered just how the games were able to pull this off. A YouTube channel called Classic Game Junkie has a video series called How Did They Do That, which focuses on explaining the certain mechanics of different unique tricks from different games, and he had a video on Mario Galaxy's gravity. I'd recommend watching that for a better understanding, but the short version is something along the lines of the game calculating which direction is up and down for Mario, and repositioning on the fly whenever Mario moves, and based on the polygons of the platform he's standing on. Again, he had it in a lot more detail, so just look in YouTube for How Did They Do That, Mario Galaxy, or just look for Classic Game Junkie's channel. A more aesthetic change is the fact that this is the first Mario game to have its music performed by a live orchestra, which really adds to the cinematic scope of exploring the awe-inspiring galaxies of the game. While Koji Kondo was involved with the music, like he tends to be, the orchestral parts were handled by Mahito Yokota, who'd previously worked on Donkey Kong Country Jungle Beat. Despite all the amazing pieces, one manages to stand out above the rest. The music for Gusty Garden Galaxy, one of the later levels in the game, it's really caught on as the leitmotif of Super Mario Galaxy in general, first game and the second one. Even though it's not even the designated Mario Galaxy main theme, whenever there's a reference to Mario Galaxy, they'll always play the same section from the Gusty Gardens theme, the da 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 da. And to just show you how far it's come, when Rosalina, a character who was introduced in this game, was announced for Super Smash Bros. For Wii U and 3DS, her trailer purely consisted of the Gusty Garden theme music. It didn't have any other songs from the game. To be fair, the Gusty Garden theme is remixed elsewhere in the first game, like in the purple coin levels and during part of the credits theme, so it was possible that they were kind of counting on that song to catch on, but maybe not as much as it did. If I could be entirely honest, though, Gusty Garden isn't even my favorite song in the game. It's a good one. All of them are pretty good. But I don't know if it really screams Mario Galaxy the way Nintendo seems to think it does. In a few ways, this game was an upswing for Mario. His GameCube outings were kinda, well, people weren't as fond of them as they were with other Mario games. Sunshine, as great as it was pretty divisive. The GameCube was also when there were all the different Mario parties that started getting repetitive, and the sports games were kind of getting a little crazy with the filler characters and their rosters. Well, actually, that one kind of got worse in time, depending on who you ask, but as I said, this game, Mario Galaxy, kind of represents when they started putting a bit more of that classic Mario charm into the main games to keep the old school fans happy and, you know, put new spins on them so that it didn't get stale. Mario Sunshine's problems generally relate to the fact that Mario's moves in the game rely on his water jetpack, or the fact that every stage was tropical, or just how silly the plotline was. Galaxy was more unanimously praised, if I could speak properly, to the point where it's actually the number one game on GameRankings.com right now, beating out The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. And then it also beats Mario Odyssey, Super Mario Galaxy 2, and Legend of Zelda Breath of the Wild. And honestly, I think this top five as a whole speaks to the quality Nintendo can produce when they really give it their all, even if I was personally underwhelmed by Breath of the Wild. And while some people would say that Ocarina of Time hasn't aged as gracefully as other games, or that it's become overrated, it's still considered to be a very solid video game, and I say it had to get that reputation somehow, after all. 9 years later, Mario Galaxy came and dethroned it. Not by a wide margin, but it's still a noteworthy feat. And yes, I would say that the game deserves the reputation it has. It's pure distilled Mario platforming, the foundation of the whole series with the added fun of gravity. Going back to more of Sunshine's perceived flaws, Mario Galaxy addressed a lot of it. And to start with that, Mario relies mostly on his acrobatics to get around. He doesn't have a water pack to save him and take up most of his moveset anymore. He does get a primary gimmick in the form of the Star Spin, which is a spinning punch attack that pretty much does whatever you want it to at the given time. It even gives you an extra few seconds in the air when you're trying to make tricky jumps. Mario also gets classic power-ups, of course, like the Fire Flower and the 1-Up, but he also gets a lot of new ones, too. And some are better than others, but none of them are very intrusive. They're generally restricted to certain levels of the game. And as far as settings go, the space theme is surprisingly diverse. You do get a few stages that emphasize the outer space theme, but more often than not, it's more like they took classic biomes and just put a space twist on them. So there's a desert level with a bunch of weird gravity and stuff, and there's the ice level with a bunch of weird gravity and black holes and everything. The plot is also pretty grand, at least compared to what Mario usually has. Princess Peach does get kidnapped again by Bowser, but it turns out Bowser's stationed his entire army in the reaches of space, setting up these reactors and planning to recreate the universe in his image. That's certainly a step up from just framing Mario for vandalism, taking a hot bath, and calling it a day. And they give him more of a menacing voice, courtesy of Kenny James, who's now the current voice actor for Bowser. Sometimes the old voice, Scott Burns, still comes in to voice Bowser on occasion, but more often than not, Kenny James now provides the voice for Bowser, gives him a more monstrous sound. And while Bowser is in the middle of his shenanigans, he steals the stars from a place called the Comet Observatory. It's this spaceship house thing that's home to these star guys called the Lumas, and their caretaker, a human named Rosalina. Rosalina was a pretty cool character. She became a fan favorite very quickly. For one thing, she's the only princess-type character who's never been kidnapped by Bowser at all. She also gives this regal air that the others never did, commanding her spaceship and turning out to be the equivalent of a goddess in the Mario universe. Suffice to say, she made quite an impression. Although Nintendo wouldn't really start using her very much until about 2013. She made a brief appearance in Mario Galaxy 2, and she did appear in Mario Kart Wii and Mario Kart 7, but otherwise Rosalina sat out most of the games. But come Super Mario 3D World, she's added as a secret playable character. And then Super Smash Bros. For Wii U and Nintendo 3DS, they made Rosalina one of the fighters, like I'd mentioned before. And now, suddenly, she's finally become a regular fixture in Mario's party and sports games. It's a lot like the process that Bowser Jr. went through after Super Mario Sunshine. But my favorite thing about Rosalina, and I'm sure that most Galaxy veterans would agree, is the storybook. Throughout the game, you can enter the observatory's library and listen to Rosalina reading a storybook to her star babies, the Lumas. It details her backstory, how she first met the Lumas and became their mother. It's a charming story that feels like a bona fide bedtime story, with its upbeat moments, its warm and fuzzy moments, even a few tear-jerking moments. It's a display of depth that you don't really get in a lot of Mario games, and it really goes a long way to ground the game and give it a bit of heart. It's a nice break from the multitude of extremes that the rest of the game provides. The storybook was written by Yoshiaki Koizumi, the director of the game, late at night one time when no one else was in the office, and he surprised Shigeru Miyamoto with its inclusion. Miyamoto's known by Nintendo fans not to care for storyline elements in his games, but Koizumi managed to sneak it in. Koizumi himself would actually be an interesting subject for another bitcast, but we've got to stay focused here. For me, one of the marks of a well-crafted game is moments where you have different ways of reaching the same objective. While Galaxy is a very linear game, Mario's skills make for some interesting opportunities all the same, just like in other Mario games. The one example that always comes to mind for me is level 2 of the first proper stage, the Good Egg Galaxy. At the end of the level, you're on this star-shaped planetoid, and you have to run around and collect objects to start a pole star sequence, where you would use your cursor to slowly drag Mario through the air, and you had to do that to reach the star and finish the level. But if you know how to do the long jump technique, you can just grab the star right away. This isn't groundbreaking by any means, but as I said, it's an example of the freedom that Mario's moves provide him. And it's not as though the game never accounted for these. Periodically, you race a clone named Cosmic Mario across an obstacle course, and you have to get a star at the end. But after beating the whole game and unlocking Luigi, you go back to these levels, and now you're racing Cosmic Luigi. And unlike Cosmic Mario, this guy will make use of those time-saving jumps and flips. So if some of the more novice players haven't figured them out yet, then it's high time they learned. Speaking of Luigi, this was actually around the time that Nintendo started giving him more to do. He'd show up in all the party games and racing and stuff, of course, but after Super Mario World, he began to sit out most of the big adventures, most noticeably Mario 64 and Sunshine. He did get a spotlight with Luigi's Mansion, but Galaxy was the first full-fledged platformer game in 3D to feature Luigi. Granted, he has a small role in the game. You rescue him a few times, and that's about it. But like I mentioned before, you do unlock the ability to play as Luigi if you collect all 120 stars. Luigi mode is slightly harder, but generally the same, and for some reason there are two Luigis. They never really explain that one. In Galaxy 2, they let you play as Luigi as soon as you meet him, but only for the duration of certain levels. But after you beat Bowser for the last time in that game, you can switch between brothers at will. And from there, Luigi got to have more and more attention in the different main games of the series, slowly but finally becoming Mario's equal. And then he's suddenly missing in Super Mario Odyssey. That still bugs me. Oh, and before I forget, today's favorite songs. Enter the Galaxy, Space Junk Road, and Luma. Enter the Galaxy is a serious and determined piece. It only plays at the beginning and end of the story. Moments after Bowser's attack and meeting Rosalina for the first time, Mario explores one of Bowser's reactors with Enter the Galaxy playing as the backing theme, and it shows up one more time near the end when you're finally raiding Bowser's fortress. The song lets you know that Mahito Yokota and the orchestra mean business. Space Junk Road is just a slow and, no pun intended, atmospheric piece. The quiet, melancholic piano number really suits the slow-paced, quiet and empty galaxy of the game. And Luma is the piece of music associated with those storybook scenes, while also playing during a particularly touching moment at the end of the game. With all this in mind, I hope it's clear just how influential Mario Galaxy was for the rest of the Mario series, and how it earned its accolades. All these elements came together beautifully. The levels, Mario's moves, the aesthetics, the bits of storyline, it's all an amazing combination, and I wholeheartedly approve of Galaxy's number one rating. It's not my favorite game, but it's certainly up there now, and I'm glad I got to play it one more time before Odyssey came out. Once I do get my hands on that game, and I get a good feel for how it plays and everything, I'll let you know whether or not I liked it more than Galaxy. So, perhaps you'll consider subscribing to the BitCast so you'll know when that happens. Stay tuned. This has been the BitCast, and I will see you on the next one.
Listen to BitCast anytime on PodcastOne.com and on the Podcast One app.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.